Welcome to the Rise Network podcast show, a podcast dedicated to help you reach your dream lifestyle through investing in real estate. We're going to be sitting down with new, intermediate, and experienced investors to talk all about real estate and how it has changed their lives. If you're looking to scale your portfolio or even just get into real estate investing, you're in the right place. Make sure to tune in. Hello, hello, everyone. Good morning, good evening, good night. Whenever you're listening to this podcast, you're tuning into the Rise Real Estate Investing Podcast. I just realized, Mayu, that our title, intro music, I say Rise Network Podcast. We're going to have to change that somewhere down the line. So guys, if you notice kind of a change in the intro, don't be alarmed. Mayu, what's up with you? How's everything going?
It's good. You know, things have been crazy for both of us on the real estate world. We've had a significant amount of properties closing and buying and selling all over the place. And any real estate investor all over Ontario, I'm sure all of the markets are basically super hot right now. We're seeing a significant amount of buyers. I personally think it's a lot of the pent-up demand that came from the shutdown. But what we're also starting to see now, which is kind of room for caution, is a potential change in the market where we're seeing a lot of supply hitting the market. We're not sure what demand will look like in the coming months. So it's definitely a very turmoil time. No one really knows where the market will go, but you know what? There's always deals that are out there. We're constantly making offers and just always be buying, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think just recently, it was over the weekend, we found a duplex in a pretty good area at Windsor. We tried to put a preemptive offer on it, but man, as soon as we put the preemptive offer, the agent let everyone know that an offer came in and we got outbid by 30 grand nearly. So the market is, it's still pretty crazy. We're still on the lookout for deals. We're managing a couple of our projects right now. We actually just closed on a fourplex recently that we're super excited about. It's not your straightforward fourplex. We're slowly getting through it. Mayu, why don't you just kind of give the high level details on that?
Yeah. So me and Austin, we usually have our areas that we want to invest in. And this was, it's a little bit rougher of an area. The scope of work is definitely a lot more than, you know, we normally do, which is normally like very cosmetic stuff. So this one, the tenant quality that was in there by that was put in there by the previous landlord was definitely closer to the D side. We actually had squatters in there today, like our contractor just let us know. So that was great. And turning over each unit, getting each tenant out, it's definitely a longer process, but the rewards that we see in this fourplex is quite significant compared to like a normal project that we would do, right? So as long as you can justify the amount of effort that you're putting in by the returns that you're getting out of it, like, yeah, we're more than happy to do it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And we found some successes with that project, although there is some headaches with it. We got the N11 side by most of the tenants and the last unit, we're working on turning that around too. So hopefully when all is said and done, there's good profits. As the famous Canadian YouTuber Matt McKeever says, problems are profits. Yeah, we're facing problems right now, but we're going to monetize that for sure. And actually, speaking on problems, another property that we're working on is a student rental down at Windsor. And we actually got a letter from the city, not us, but the investor got a letter from the city straight directly to his house. So you can imagine he was panicking. And we were kind of panicking as well. And the city said that we're doing work without permits. I think someone saw the junk removal truck outside the property and decided to call the city. I don't know why, but there are some snitches around, but it is what it is, right? And basically what the letter said was, is that we know you're doing work without permits. We're not going to go and inspect it just yet because of COVID-19. So they're letting us do whatever, but they said after all the work is done, they're going to check and see what was reasonable without a permit and what they think that we did without a permit. Fortunately, that project, we literally just did a cosmetic lift. We did paint, flooring, the kitchen, so on and so forth. So we didn't really need a permit at all. Not really. We didn't need a permit at all. But it's just an unfortunate circumstance of COVID-19. Now the inspectors don't even verify what work you do. If there's a junk removal truck and someone snitches on you, I mean, it's going to be a hassle. I don't even want to deal with the city at all, but it's something that we have to navigate through.
Yeah, there's normally things we do to try and, you know, circumvent that, right? Like just have the junk removal bin there for like 2 or 3 days, try to keep things as organized as possible. And just really, like, we just need to complete the project really quick, right? Like get in there, do your work, get out 2 to 3 weeks max and you're done, right? Obviously, you know, COVID and the market as a whole, like there's a lot of delays and a lot of different moving pieces in a project, but For as long as we keep doing that, we'll be fine. And ultimately on this one, like there's nothing that really needed the permit, like you were saying. So we're going to be fine either way.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, we're going to be jumping straight into the podcast today. We have Waylon McGill. Waylon McGill is a senior level executive in a pretty big corporate company. He was actually an executive in several companies. So this guy's been doing really well for himself in terms of the corporate field. And he transitioned into real estate just a couple of months ago. So that's super weird, right? Because you usually don't see high level executives wanting to be active in investing. But since he's transitioned, he's had a tremendous amount of success. In this podcast, we're going to dig into the Airbnb cottage rental. He's absolutely crushing it. As you can tell by the title of the podcast, he's making what, like over $30,000 in revenue in just a couple of months of owning that. And on top of that, since recording this podcast, Waylon's been keeping very busy. So we probably need him back. He's done his first wholesale deal of like 50 or 60 grand. So he's absolutely crushing it in the corporate world and the real estate world. And it just goes to show that no matter how busy you are in work, I mean, you're not going to be busier than a senior level executive. You can always carve out time to, I guess, either chase your dreams, make more money, create passive income, create active income, whatever the case is. So make sure to tune into this podcast because we have some golden nuggets that are going to be dropped throughout. Thanks, guys. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the Rise Network podcast show. We have Waylon here. Waylon, thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be with you guys tonight.
This is exciting because this is our first real guest outside of just Mayu and myself. And you guys are in for a treat. Make sure to take your notepads out because Waylon's going to be dropping a lot of gems. Let's just dive right into it. So we talked a bit offline and anyone who can search you on LinkedIn will see that you have quite a corporate run. You've done pretty successful in the corporate world. You've held managerial positions in a bunch of different companies. So before we dive into the real estate aspects of things, why don't you dive into what you were doing before investing?
Yeah. So I guess I'll just give like a quick overview of my sales. I started selling in 2008, which as you may recall was not an ideal time economically speaking. I took 100% commission sales job selling photocopiers. I had to buy a car for the privilege of taking that 100% commission sales job. And I grinded for years before I got into tech and, I was always doing really well. Well, I shouldn't say always, you know, after the first year was really rough. But after that, I was always doing really well, but you don't make a whole lot of money in a lot of the entry-level sales types roles out there. So I got into tech probably when I was about 31. And that's when my career really accelerated. I really started to take things way more seriously. I dedicated myself to the craft. I became obsessed with sales. I read every book I could. I went to as many events as I could, as many trainings. And so I've been fortunate over the last few years to work for some really amazing companies like LinkedIn, Clio, which is a really great Canadian tech success story. And then most recently, I've been at Indeed. I've done three roles in the last 3 years there. So I started in enterprise sales, moved into a director role leading a team, and then recently, about 6 months ago, moved into a senior director role. So managing an entire sales org SMB for Indeed Canada.
That's awesome. Waylon, like that's a pretty crazy, background on yourself. You've had a lot of different successes. What ultimately, I guess, made you really go into real estate? Like most people, at least our audience, I'd imagine a lot of them, you know, are at various stages in their career, have varied levels of success. And they're all kind of wondering, you know, if we had the same life that Waylon had, maybe we wouldn't really go into real estate.
A big interesting point to that is that when you're at that level of success, you find a lot of people who are, I guess, on the senior level as passive partners. You're taking the active approach to things. So yeah, why don't you touch on that a bit?
Yeah, totally. And I think that both have value. Like being a passive investor with someone who knows what they're doing is a great idea, but it excites me. You know what I mean? So I got into it probably about a year ago is when I first even considered the idea. And it was just, you know, I was at a party, a friend's birthday, catching up with it with another buddy, and he bought a couple properties in the last 2 years. And it's not like he was a guy that was, you know, had this amazing top of the line corporate career. And I was just like, wow, like how has he done this? And so I started educating myself. And the thing is, like, even if you make a great salary, like the day I stop working is the day I stop getting paid. Right. Like I can't so retire. Like, right. And you also, you get that lifestyle inflation. I know like Austin, you're one of these guys who's good on like keeping the expenses down, but for most of us, the more money you make, the more money you spend. And a lot of it's just accidental. It's not like I'm, you know, buying all these luxury goods, but like your time, as your time becomes more valuable, you stop spending, like, it doesn't make sense for you to cook anymore, right? It doesn't make sense for you to do a lot of things. So with the real estate thing, it was like, I wanted something that I can stop working and money still comes in. Originally, I kind of had this misguided notion because I was watching, you know, all these YouTube videos that are about BRRRRs from, you know, 2017 or 2018, where everybody's getting, they're just getting their houses for free, basically, right? They're refinancing, they're getting every dollar back. I thought, oh, I'll buy like 20 houses and I'll refinance them all. And then I'll be able to retire on, you know, $300,000 of cash flow. That was kind of my idea back then. And since then, the reality's kind of set in that it's a lot harder to do it now than it was a few years ago. But it was really just that you can't out earn appreciation, right? If you got a house in Toronto that's $2 million, that's going up 5% a year, that's $100,000 a year. Like, for you to save $100,000 a year, you probably have to make 400, yep. Right? So you just start realizing the power of leverage and the fact that when the house goes up, even though you might only own 20% of it, you get all of the appreciation. The bank gets none of it, right? So I just started looking at the economics of it that way and thinking, the best way to get ahead is not to try to make the most money you can. It's to take advantage of leverage and make money off of other people's money and the bank's money. And that's kind of what got me into it to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So you talked about the BRRRR there quickly, and something that, you know, me and Austin are definitely, I think everyone is big on the BRRRR at this point, but what's your strategy, Willen?
So I'm kind of gone against the grain a little bit in that, like, yeah, the BRRRR is definitely my ideal strategy and what I want to do mostly. But I've done, you know, 3 deals in the last 7 months since I started, and they're all different strategies. And I imagine that my next couple deals will probably be different strategies as well. Like I said, most of the advice you'll get from people is like, pick a market, pick a strategy, and get really good at it. But what I found was it's not like there's great deals growing on trees that are just available for you and nobody else, right? So if you want to do, so I started in Brantford. There's a lot of people who want to invest in Brantford and buy underpriced real estate and renovate it and end up with like a free house, right? So the margins get squeezed. So my first one, it was really a last minute thing. Me and my, we got married in November, and I'd already used a first time home buyer credit to buy my principal residence condo downtown where I am right now. And I was like, we got to take advantage of the fact that you can still do this before we get married. So, you know, a lot of people say you don't want to use the first time home buyer credits. There's CMHC fees, and they are ridiculous fees. As a percentage, it's robbery. But if you're getting appreciation and cash flow, it's like you're going to make that back. So we bought a triplex for just under $700,000. That was our first thing. You know, our cash flow or our gross rents on that are $7,400 a month. You know, you're getting about $1,600 profit. So it was a buy and hold. There's no, like, we added one bedroom to one of the units, turned it from a 2-bedroom to a 3-unit, but it was pretty much a buy and hold. And it was just a last minute, like, let's take advantage of this credit while we can. Then I did a BRRRR, like a pretty standard BRRRR, bought a duplex or a single family home off a wholesaler.
And that's in Brantford too?
Yeah, also in Brantford. And we did a BRRRR on that. We paid $298 for it. We put $120 in, including like carrying costs and all that stuff, you know, the mortgage payments during that period. And we refinanced for $490, which we were really happy with, like, because that refinance was done like maybe 2 or 3 weeks into COVID. Like, it was the beginning of April. So there's a lot of concern. It was, you know, the appraiser is only coming by, he's driving by, he's not going in the property, you know, which has positives and negatives. Like, if you can have great photos, you know, you can probably influence that decision. So we ended up with a refi there where we left $26,000 in the property on a property worth $490, which is not
bad. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not perfect BRRRRs like everybody was doing a few years ago, but I think now that's pretty solid.
Yeah. Was that a duplex conversion?
Yeah, it was a duplex conversion, but it was a little different than typical in that it had been a duplex previously, and then the current owner just, like, he just turned it back into a single family home. But like, it was, the electrical was a disaster. My electrician said that it, you know, made him want to cry to see what this guy had done to the house. It was super dangerous. But I felt we pretty good with that. Like, we were really happy with that refi value. And then we did the cottage, which me and my wife, really, that was like totally a team effort. she'd been sort of more of a passive partner in the investing until that, and then really took on a more active role with that. And that's just been incredible so far.
So let's actually backtrack into some of the properties you're talking about earlier. So you were doing a duplex conversion. Well, technically, let's call it a duplex conversion because there was a, I guess it was kind of a weird scenario. Were you doing any of the work yourself? Because I know when I started investing, and even Mayu as well, our biggest fear was not knowing enough about renovations and getting screwed over by contractors, which of course the industry is notorious for that. Yeah. So how did you end up approaching that situation?
So what I did, like when I started in real estate, is one, I just listened to, I probably listened to a couple hundred podcast episodes. So I got a ton of education. I watched so much Matt McKeever's channel, you know, Sarah Larby, Right Club. Like I listened to all their stuff. And so I had a pretty good, I got a pretty good background that way. Like I personally don't know anything about, you know, houses, fixing them, anything like that. That's not my thing. But I knew enough to just like go to events and then talk to other investors, find out who they were using. And then literally I went and I sat down for lunch with the contractor at a Right Club event. And I just chatted with him for half an hour, 45 minutes. I knew he was a contractor, and I vetted him with some other people. They said great things. And to be honest, it was like a really great experience. Like actually he's been one of our first tenants or renters at our cottage. You know, you get a great contractor, you got to treat them really well because they are hard to find. But yeah, I didn't know anything about that. So I was just like, just trust the experience of these other investors who are doing really well. They think this person's great. I'll probably think so too.
I love that. Yeah. So that's a big thing with my business too. I always leverage other people, right? If I don't know exactly what I'm doing, I'll talk to someone else who knows what they're doing and ask who they're using. And when you start leveraging other people, that's really how you build and scale your business. So I guess you were mentioning a couple of properties that you had there. So the cottage one, that sounds pretty interesting. Why don't you give some more details into that cottage? So how did you acquire it? What are the numbers like? Just why don't we dive into that a bit more?
Before we get into that, what market is it in?
It's in Muskoka.
And how did you decide on like Muskoka? Because I've been looking at cottages for like months, and I'll start off at Rice Lake and then I'll be down in like St. Catharines looking, and then I'm like in Muskoka and like all the different like lakes in Ontario, right? So how do you decide on Muskoka and like why?
So I'm the same as you. I looked at everything. So I found, again, it's just like I do a ton of research. Like I you try to control as much as you can by just educating yourself. And there was this guy, and I can't remember his name, but he had really great content on, oh, here's the average rental rates and here's the average occupancy in like the different markets in, you know, cottage country. And I just reached out to him and he was super gracious, but he was like, you know what? I'm actually a realtor who lives in Toronto. My specialty is selling Toronto real estate. Do you want me to connect you with somebody whose waterfront is their specialty? So he connected me with that guy. And I basically, I said, okay, I'm open to the Kawarthas, Halliburton and Muskoka. And I just got, you know, there's probably like 7 to 10 cottages a day that I would get sent in this list. And I went through every single cottage. Like I would get that email at like 8 a.m. and I would like receive the email and I would spend the next 30 minutes going through everything. So you start getting, when you look at a few hundred cottages that way, you start to get a real good understanding of value. And then I used AirDNA, which is it's a software that scrapes data from Airbnb and VRBO and sites like that. And it takes that data and it gives you an estimate of how much revenue actual specific cottages are generating. So you can take a look at a cottage through AirDNA and say, okay, this cottage did $80,000 last year. And you can get a look at like, how do they decorate it? Like, what are the fixtures like? What's the lake like? And you start understanding that there's certain things that you pay for when you buy a cottage for personal use that don't necessarily offer a ton of value to renters, right? Like being on a huge lake is awesome, but your renters don't have a boat, right? So you could pay an extra $200,000 for the same cottage to have it on a bigger lake, but that's going to offer your guests almost no difference in experience. So it's kind of just being strategic about it and looking at all that stuff. I would definitely recommend you have to work with a waterfront realtor. There's just so many nuances to different lakes. Like this lake smells funny. This lake has a mucky bottom. And so it's not good for swimming or anything like that. Right. So you need to work with a waterfront specialist, like always good to work with local specialists in real estate. But I think waterfront is next level. Basically it came down to we wanted something we could get ready as quickly as possible. I knew that COVID was going to have a big impact on people's travel plans. And I knew that all these people who had March breaks canceled and stuff like that, they were going to want to be on vacation sometime before 2021, and their options were going to be limited. So it had to be something where we could close quickly, and it was basically ready. Like, maybe we need decor, but it can't be something we have to put a bunch of renos into. That'll come later. I plan to burr a bunch of cottages. Like, that's my goal. But right away, we were like, what can we get to market as quickly as possible?
You definitely made the right move on that. Like, I've been trying to find a cottage to just rent out on Airbnb. Literally, all of them are rented out right now. The market's insane there. Can't even find a place for myself.
Yeah, like, me and my group of friends, we've been big on, like, renting cottages for years. It's, none of us really have, like, a cottage of our own, so we just keep renting it and get to try out different lakes and stuff like that. And, like, cottage prices have definitely skyrocketed over the last few years. I remember, like, 4 or 5 years ago, we were able to find things for, like, half the price of what it is today.
Totally.
So let's talk about this one that you bought then. And you said it was pretty much turnkey?
Yeah, like, we negotiated it that way. Like, it was, we want it and we want everything in it and we want all the water sports stuff that you have, right? So we had a sense, I can't remember what was written in the listing, but what was written in the listing tipped me off is like, they're not moving, they're not upsizing to a bigger cottage or something. They're getting out of a cottage, which means they probably have no need for basically any of this stuff, right? And that was a priority too. It's like death by a thousand cuts. Like, you don't really think about how many things you have to purchase, like, to get a place ready. It's like, if you're trying to set something up on Airbnb, you have to have everything there that anybody could ever really want, right? Just think about how many things you have in the kitchen of a typical house, right? There's hundreds of things. So to get something and be like, no, you got to leave everything. That was a priority because, again, it was quickness to market. We closed on it June 15th. So we set as the date, like, we want this thing rented out Canada Day weekend. Which means you got 2 weeks to take a place and, like, fully have it ready.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
Yeah, so what were kind of the systems that you needed to build out there? So it looked like you kind of just jumped into it real quickly, wanted kind of a turnkey place, but you still got to get your cleaners. You still got to get your supplies in there. There's a lot to manage with an Airbnb in the background that I think a lot of people overlook. So what was the preparation over those 2 weeks and what type of expenses did you incur?
Yeah, so it's so much more work than a typical rental. My wife handled the, like, getting the cleaners, and through them we got a handyman. And basically the way we planned it was, we're going to go up for 2 to 3 weeks at the start. We had a bunch of guests come, and that was, like, a huge mistake just from the perspective of, like, we underestimated how much work it would be. And, like, we had great times with the guests, but it was, like, 2 weeks of actually just focused on getting it ready would have been the best thing to do. But the idea was, we need to have the cleaners come multiple times while we're there where we have a checklist and we take them through the process. So one, we understand how long it should take them to do it, but also they understand that it's not just like cleaning anything else. Like, if you want top market rents, you need to treat this like you run a 5-star hotel, which means that your expectations of cleanliness are going way up. If you want to charge that kind of money, you need to be delivering that type of service. You want to be leaving little gift baskets, things like that. It doesn't have to be anything crazy or from a store, but just like have a nice basket that has, you know, we had, I think, 3 moms with 2 kids each up for our first guest. And it's like, okay, you know, a couple of bottles of rosé and some stuff for the kids, right? Just like little touches like that. But we probably spent $10,000 on decor, you know, sheets, mattress covers. Like, again, it's like I said, it's kind of death by a thousand cuts that if you're getting it equipped, you have to get everything that you need for a kitchen. You know, one of the things that I think is a good tip is just, and it's something that grocery stores are really good at, is they make the price of things that you know really cheap, and they get you on all those things that you don't realize what's a good price on. So milk and eggs are always like very competitively priced. But some sort of like weird noodle, you know, they're like, okay, you can jack the price on that because people don't have a reference point. So when you're getting a place ready, you want to make sure that anything that you have that people are going to be able to recognize quality, you go high quality, right? So we went with big TVs, right? We're like, let's do a, like, 65-inch smart TV in one room, 55-inch smart TV in the other room, because if you're trying to create this environment that seems upscale, but then you like you cheaped out on the TV, you saved a few hundred bucks, but then they look at that and they're like, oh, okay, well, all this other stuff that I thought was good, maybe it's not as good as I thought because these people seem to be taking the cheap road. Right.
That makes so much sense. So obviously this cottage then is waterfront.
Yeah. It's actually double waterfront. That's kind
of that. Double shit. Waterfront.
You need to hook me up.
Austin, yeah. Austin, there you go. You find your connect right now for Fertile. Your
offline deal. Yeah, no, there's actually, it's right between two lakes that are about maybe 100, there's maybe 120 feet between the lakes at the most narrow point. And so there's our cottage and maybe three or four others that have access to both. So we've got, and it's cool because they're different experiences. Like the front is, it's got these lily pads all around and you just like toss a line out. You're pulling up smallmouth bass every 10 or 15 minutes. And it's as like a sand entry, like packed sand. So it's good for kids. And then the other side, it's like, it's a dock system and you know, you dive off the dock, it's already like 15 feet. So we kind of got the best of both. And it means that in the morning you're getting the sunrise on one lake and you're getting the sunset on the other side.
That's amazing. That actually sounds awesome. So awesome.
I'm hella jealous right now. So,
we'll
so
retreat up there. We'll do a real estate retreat up there sometime.
Oh yeah. We're going to be messaging you every day following this podcast. So you mentioned about getting the cleaner and buying some stuff for the property. Is there any way that you're planning to systemize it? So how did you get a hold of this cleaner? Did you throw a Kijiji ad? And in terms of handyman, I'm sure you don't want to go down and deal with the little like plumbing fixes or stuff like that. So how did you go about building your team, especially in a super rural area?
Yeah. So that was something that we were really afraid of. I think it's one of those things where it's like, you kind of got to look at it as like the same way that tech entrepreneurs do, which is like, if there's profits to be had, just like you'll figure it out. Right. So just like, it's like you launch the spaceship and figure it out on the way up. Right. So you're just like, there are people who clean houses in all these towns. Some of them have Kijiji ads. Some of them are part of different services like Handy or whatever. So just give yourself time, but like go to those sites, go to Kijiji. There's sites that have like cleaners go to, I can't remember the name of them, 'cause my wife handled this part of it. Like I sort of, saw her through the process, but it was like, she went to a site, she found the names of cleaners, she contacted them. You know, these people were like, oh yeah, we're like executive house cleaners, whatever that means, but like, sounds good. But we had them over. We knew that like, we need to have them come multiple times. And we were fortunate that the first people who came were up to standard. They clean a few other Airbnbs. Like I would say that should never hold you back. Like you will find a cleaner, right? Like, don't worry about it. Buy the place. And put feelers out. Worst case scenario, if you had to go up one time, do something yourself, it's not the end of the world. They actually connected us with a handyman.
Beautiful.
That they're just familiar with. But like literally at the end of our street where the joint mailboxes are, there were, and we didn't look at this, but there were like 8 handymen and cleaners and snow removal people like that had put their business cards. There's kind of like a little, you know, like one of those like cork boards or whatever that goes beside the Canada Post, like the community mailboxes. And there was all sorts of people. So like, it's not hard. Like you'll find somebody. The hard thing, I guess, would be more making sure that you find people who will clean to the standard you expect. Right. And the only way to do that is to clean with them and make sure they understand what you expect from them.
Definitely. Yeah. Go for it.
I was going to say, as far as other systems, again, you want to limit, because it is way more work. It is still, no matter what you do, it's way, way more work unless you outsource it than doing a typical rental. So like, just having, you know, we've got a, like an August lock. It's like a smart lock. We've got a video doorbell. So you've got these things. So, you know, you send a link to someone who's checking in, they log in, they have access to lock and unlock the door with their smartphone, which means you've got a check-in process that's seamless. Nobody has to be there. You don't have to exchange keys with anybody. You can also tell, you know, our camera covers both of our entrances. So like if somebody says it's 8 people, we know it's 8 people, right? We know when they check in.
Beautiful.
Because you gotta think your neighbors, right? Like the biggest thing, I think if there's a risk in short-term rental, it's neighbors just kiboshing the whole thing, right? Like if you piss off the people around you enough, they can make it very difficult for you to operate. And that's going to cost you so much money. So just putting things in place, we got a noise aware system. So that's basically a system that it monitors the decibel level. So we've got one inside and one outside. So it doesn't record sound. It just records the volume of sound. So you can get ahead of things. You get alert to your phone basically saying like, you know, it's louder than it's supposed to be. Because you really, as much as you want to provide an incredible guest experience and like, that's got to be, you really, I don't think should get into the business if you don't care about that. Like if you're not a hospitality person and that doesn't matter to you, I don't think you'll have much success, or at least not as much as you could. But you also got to think about everybody around you still deserves to enjoy their cottage as much as they did before. And so you got to put things in place to ensure that that's the case.
That's awesome. That's the first time I've heard of that. All right. So I think at this point, what everyone really wants to know is what the numbers look like. So given you got this awesome property out in Muskoka, like what are the numbers?
Yeah. So purchase price was $727,500. So, you know, at 20% down, you're looking at, you know, a little over $140,000. Closing costs, all that stuff, you know, you're in for another 10 or so. So maybe $155,000 that you've got to have and be able to put up in order to make it happen. And then when I broke it out, mortgage payment plus all of the fixed costs. So insurance, you got to have insurance for specifically for short-term rental. Airbnb covers you for that, but you don't necessarily want to do all your bookings through Airbnb. So it's important to have that. That stuff is about $45,000 for the year, $45,300 fixed costs to operate. And then we sort of worked it out when we looked at the numbers, it's about 10% of the rental income for the handyman and the cleaners. So, hold on.
So 45,000 included, what exactly?
That's insurance for the year.
Mortgage, insurance,
okay.
Utilities.
Yeah. So your mortgage payment's about like 3,000 to maybe 3,200 a month, roughly around there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's around with property tax around like 35.
Okay. So then another about like 600 to 700 for insurance, some utilities, and some like other, I guess, ancillary costs, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you're at about like $4,000 a month almost.
Yeah. 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 Just okay. Under $4,000 a month. And then the variable expenses, we worked it out. Like we looked at the next couple months, we know what our cleaning schedule is. And it works out that about 10% of our income goes towards cleaning and handyman and his stuff. A lot of it's kind of cleaning related. It's just like, oh, we need to put a couple of nails in here in the deck, whatever it is, take some excess garbage out because it's more than the city allows. So that's at about 10,000. Now, when it comes to the income, so we did $36,000 between July and August.
That's unreal.
Yeah, it's crazy.
$36,000. Holy crap.
I thought you meant like $3,600. I was like, is he talking about like a week? Damn.
And honestly, it could have been way higher. We launched, I think, June like 28th. We like put it up, or June 27th. And originally we started at like $700 a night. And we got, within an hour, we had lots of booking requests. And so we just, over the course of those 4 days, we just kept upping the prices and people kept booking.
So were you underpriced at the beginning just to get some bookings in and kind of build a track record?
Yeah. So we were more flexible for the first like 2 weeks because we're like, we're literally trying to book immediately, right? Like it's June 27th or whatever. We want to be booked out July 1st. Or whatever it was, like it was within a few days. So we did lower amounts then, and we also were more flexible in terms of the dates. So I'll give you guys the rundown on exactly how we do the dates to ensure that we're booked out every single day. But we didn't do that for the first half of July, and we also didn't realize how high we could jack the prices and still get solid bookings. So we just kept as much as the demand kept coming in. I'm like, okay, let's keep raising it. And so like, we ended up doing $1,100 a night.
Holy crap.
In like mid to late August for the weekends. And the way it works is you can't book Friday, Saturday night. You have to book Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night.
Yeah.
Because we don't want vacancy. So you're getting $3,300 for a regular weekend in August.
And you're attracting a high clientele because the rates are going to kind of fish out people like Mayu and I who are trying to go down to the party, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no party boys like you and Mayu. No. That is actually a major factor as well, right? And we thought of that even just in terms of the way we decorated. Like, we don't want to attract a party clientele. Like, partying's awesome. It's great. Done lots of it. Encourage everybody else to. That's not what you want at your Airbnb, right? Like, you want people that are well-behaved, respectful, young families, stuff like that, right? Like, people who would treat the cottage the way that I treat it when I own it. Like, I'm not going up there to party. I'm going up there to enjoy nature and just get away from the city. So when you charge higher rents, you do discourage. It's not going to be a bunch of 25-year-old guys renting our place to go up there and get lit, right?
So in your revenue, is that just rental income or does that include cleaning fees? So I know you can sometimes make a spread on the expense and what you charge the guests for cleaning fees.
No, we don't. We definitely lose money on cleaning. Like, we have these cleaners, it's two women, and they come and the two of them clean for 2.5 to 3 hours. So it's like, we want it, like, they do a couple loads of laundry, you know, all the beds are like in pristine condition. Like, everything is to make, we want you to walk in and feel like you're at a hotel. Right. So there's for us to charge a cleaning fee to make up for that, we never could. But if you want to know like schedule of how we do bookings to ensure that it's booked out all the time, is we only allow check-in and check-out on Monday and Friday. So you can check in on Monday and check out on Friday, or check in on Monday, check out on Monday, or same with Friday. And that way it ensures that every single day we have that there's a checkout, there's someone checking in the same day. So we have 100% occupancy.
Gotcha. So a question that I had is that, so 10% repairs and small things throughout the house, 10% of your revenues, right? But so that's variable. Your revenue is also going to be very variable as well. So you're going to have those up seasons and down seasons. So what's the logic of keeping the, I guess, handyman variable? Because if it's truly 10% of your all-time high revenue, then shouldn't that be kind of a fixed amount that you carry along every month?
No, so it's not it's handyman and cleaning, right? Okay. So it's super dependent on how much it's being used. Like, if it's not being used as much, we don't need him to come. Because a lot of it's like he'll do multiple things at once, right? You're like, okay, we need someone to pick up a bit of extra garbage, and here's like one or two things we need done. You know, it might be like he doesn't need to come and like leaf blow the decks and stuff to make sure that they're clean for people if nobody's coming, right? So that's why we keep the cleaning expense in him as being kind of a variable cost that's related to when people are there. Because it's not like there's stuff breaking down in the cottage. The cottage is fairly newly renovated. In the last 2 years, the previous owner, they bought it when it was like trash. And he was a skilled trade guy, and he like, so it's, everything's done up new. So there's not a whole lot of like wear and tear that we have to worry about. It's more the outside that he's dealing with.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And as for, you were looking into AirDNA in terms of looking at vacancies, rental rates and all of that. Have you kind of projected that out throughout the rest of the year, winter months and I guess March, April as well?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is, so AirDNA is an amazing tool, right? It's like strongly recommend, like you'd be absolutely foolish to buy a cottage without investing in a month or two subscription to AirDNA in your markets. If you know about it, if you don't know about it, it's impossible to be foolish, but so you can see the vacancy rate, but you can also see the vacancy rate by percentile, like top percentiles of bookings, right? So if you're looking at, so if you want to say, what are the top 10% of cottages booked out in March? In Muskoka, the answer is 90%, right?
Holy crap. So
yeah, exactly, right? So if you're in the top 10% of Muskoka properties, you're still booked out 90% of the winter. If you're in the 75th percentile, maybe you're booked out about 65-70%, right? So I haven't-
still pretty good.
It's still very solid. And then you can get breakdown too on like, what are the different amenities that different places offer? Less than 10% of Muskoka properties have a hot tub on Airbnb. So fairly easy solution. We're going to take money that we make over the summer, and in October we'll put in a hot tub. So now we're in the top 10% just for having a hot tub. We also prioritized having a place that inside looks super nice. If you see the photos, it's beautiful. The decor is beautiful. It's a way nicer cottage inside than some others. We don't have as much land as some other cottages. That would be awesome. but we prioritize like what's the inside like. We've got, you know, Disney Plus, we've got, you know, multiple big smart TVs. There's two living rooms. It's open concept. So the inside experience at our cottage is much better. We think that if we throw a hot tub in there, we should be able to be in that top 10, if not at least top 25%. And that would give us occupancy of over 70% over the winter.
That's great. I think a lot of people are seeing. So how I like to see it is that as long as you do some research on AirDNA, I'm pretty sure 70% of the people out there doing Airbnb are not using that source at all. Totally. So as long as you can treat your Airbnb somewhat like a business, you're going to be doing better than the majority of people operating their Airbnb, which are usually mom pops or just average people looking to throw money aside.
Yeah, it's really, if you approach it systematically and like a real pro, like you're going to be able to dominate. Like you look at a lot of the Airbnbs, it's like, it just looks like somebody's cottage, right? There's personal touches in there. They're not thinking about, you also got to think about like, there are like cheap ways that you can significantly increase the appeal of your property, right? So for example, we've got a trampoline in the water. We've got this, like, it's like kind of like an inflatable party dock where, you know, it's got a little canopy and you can have like eight people floating. It's attached to the dock. It's got a built-in cooler, got a couple of kayaks. So you're like, it's just plug and play when you go up there on the water that you've got a bunch of things to do. And none of those things cost much money. Similarly, we just bought a bunch of games like Can Jam and all these ladder ball games. It's like spent like $250 on games, but we've got like a great photo where all these games are busted out. And you kind of think like, oh, everything we need to have an amazing time, things that people did in another cottage that they love that game, but they're not going to buy it and bring it. That stuff's such a cheap way to really enhance the experience without spending a lot of money.
Your cottage literally sounds like an amusement park. It's insane. Games, yeah, hot tub, TVs, Disney Plus. That's unreal.
And again, what's Disney Plus? $12 a month?
Yeah.
Like, but if you've got some kids that you want to put to bed while mom and dad have a couple glasses of wine in the other living room, like, it's priceless.
Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, I guess your cash on cash return, you're probably looking at like a, like, without getting too technical here, we're probably looking at a payback period of like a couple of years at most, like maybe like 3 years, right? Like if your total investment at this point is close to 100K, and I quickly ran the numbers on my phone, and it looks like you're going to get all of your money back within like 2-3 years.
Yeah. Depending on how you look at it, right? If you look at like, if you factor in mortgage pay down and appreciation, I think we're looking at probably 12 to 15 months.
Right. Yeah. I was looking purely as the cash that goes into your pocket.
Yeah.
Even that's pretty solid, right? Like, that's crazy.
All right. Awesome, Waylon. Thank you so much for sharing those numbers. I think Mayu and I, Mayu, what do you think? We need to buy a place for us?
I've been looking at cottages for a while, but now this is too big to ignore.
100%.
Maybe I'll be talking to Waylon about this more offline.
So we're going to jump into the section of the podcast where we ask our guests three questions. And this is just to dive in a bit more into your personality. FYI, we still haven't named this section yet. So you might hear a name later on in the podcast. But so the first question we want to get into is, Waylon, where will we see you in 5 years?
So in 5 years, I think I want to have built a business where I can, me and my wife, family, if we've got, you know, children by that point, we can travel the world and kind of do whatever we want. I think I'm moving into the wholesale space, recognizing that finding great deals is probably the most valuable aspect of a real estate business. So that's where I'm moving now and focusing my efforts. But I'd like to own a bunch of cottages, more rentals. I'd like to be in apartment buildings at that point. But what I'd really like to be doing is not doing anything I don't want to do. I only spend time doing what I want to do. And I spend very few months in Canada when it's cold.
That's awesome. So wholesaling, are you going to be focusing on the cottage realm or I guess, what's your focus area?
My focus is sort of like the air, just because I know so many investors that are in and around the Hamilton area, is like Guelph, Kitchener, Waterloo, Brantford, that whole region. So I'm really focused on that region. I am going to use wholesaling techniques to try to acquire more cottages for myself. I don't want to buy more cottages off the MLS. I want to find off market deals. Cause then you can end up getting cottages for free basically once you burr them. Yeah. So that's my focus there. But to sell to other investors, it's just, you know, 1-3 unit buildings, I think, is kind of the bread and butter in those markets.
We're going off track a bit, but Yeah, like if you're going to wholesale cottages, let me know, because there's not many cottage wholesalers out there that I'm aware of. So it's a pretty untapped niche market. So definitely that seems very profitable.
We did get one letter from a wholesaler in our mailbox when we were there. And I know there are a couple of wholesalers out there who do it, but they keep them for themselves. So they wholesale all over the place, but they buy cottages and keep them for themselves.
Ah, bastards.
Yeah.
Not me though. I'm going to share with you.
Ah, there you go. Awesome. I love it. Sharing.
All right. So our next question for the what's working out to be a not so rapid round. If you were to get $10 million today, what would you be doing with it?
I think first off that like I've got family and my wife's got family that aren't as fortunate as we are like to work for big tech companies. So one would be taking care of that, but two would be, I just don't want to do anything ever again that I don't want to do, which means I would still invest in real estate no matter how much money I had, because it's just intellectually stimulating. It's fun. You get to network with other people and just talk to other people who are doing cool shit. And so I would still do that, but I would be very mobile. If my wife was down for it, I'd be like, let's take off. Let's go for 2 or 3 years. And like, we'll come back for, you know, a couple months, we'll come back for a month at Christmas, a month in July, stay at the cottage. But like, we would be mobile traveling Asia, South America, Europe, everywhere.
Nice. Yeah. I find a commonality between a lot of investors is that we're doing this investing stuff to be able to have mobility and move around. I definitely do want to travel. If I had $10 million, I'd live somewhere else in the world.
Totally. It's the money like is good, but freedom is way better, right? And the freedom to go around the world, experience different cultures, do all that stuff. I think that's such a huge motivator for a lot of us.
Freedom to get away from shitty Toronto weather.
Yeah, I agree.
And our last question is if you could have dinner with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
So I think for me, it would be Eddie Murphy. When I was growing up, like I was obsessed with Eddie Murphy. I saw my sister watching Eddie Murphy Raw and Delirious with her friends when I was just a very small kid. It was completely inappropriate for me to be hearing what he was saying, but like, I thought he was so funny. I was obsessed. I wanted to be him. I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. And I think he's just like, he's in many ways like a godfather of modern comedy. So, and every other top comic that I love, they all say that Eddie's the most fun guy to hang out with, the guy that makes them all laugh the most. So I just love laughing. So I think at dinner with Eddie Murphy, you'd never laugh so hard in your life.
I got to check out his Netflix. I'm guessing some of his older comedy series are up on Netflix. So I need to check that out.
Yeah, some of it hasn't aged so well. Like there's definitely things you could say then that were funny and they're actually just not as funny now. But I'm excited that he's talking about getting back into doing stand-up and hitting up the club. So definitely I've got plans to try to get to New York when he starts doing that and hope to catch him somewhere.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Waylon. This was fantastic. I definitely learned a lot. Mayu, I'm sure you learned a lot as well. We're probably going to have to do a follow-up sometime soon because you've been scaling very, very quickly and we want to see how the wholesale side of the things go eventually down the road as well. Any final words? Where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook, Waylon McGill. I think I basically go by the same handle on Instagram. Last thing I would say is just I just want to say that like what you've done, like you mentioned that I scaled quickly, you scaled super fast and it was inspirational to see because like you're not an old guy. You're a very young guy who accomplished a lot of stuff very quickly. And it opened my eyes to think that I should be thinking bigger than what I originally was. So I just want to say thank you. I know I reached out to you probably the first time months ago because I thought what you were doing was really cool and you were always super gracious. So I really appreciate that. And, you know, I might not be thinking as big as I have been if it hadn't been to see what you've done.
Guys, I don't know how to respond to compliments.
I have the same problem.
Thank you. Oh, man, that I'm crying tears. Don't put this on YouTube. Wow. Awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Waylon, for that. So just so everyone knows, once again, it's waylon.mcgill, McGillo, LinkedIn, Instagram, etc. Go give him a follow and reach out to Waylon and talk more about cottages. So with that being said, everyone, this concludes our episode and stay tuned for the next one.